Hey, everybody, a wonderful conversation with Dr. Corey. I asked the question, would you vaccinate your kids? His answer shocked me. We talk about that and the war on ivermectin. You got to listen to this episode. It is remarkable. Text it to your friends, especially if you are skeptical of the health establishment in this country. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. In addition, we have Phil Hottenspiller for his new book, Midnight in America. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. This man is a hero. I mean it. He had a wonderful interview with Tucker Carlson. He deserves that type of a platform. It is Dr. Pierre Corey. Dr. Corey, welcome back to the program. I wanted to have you on for several stories. We'll start with this. Texas doctors force FDA to remove COVID-19 posts in settlement. What's going on here?
Yeah, imagine that. So basically, you know, the FDA, this was a court case about how the FDA overstepped their statutory authority. They have no business interfering in the practice of medicine or impacting how we practice medicine. They're a regulatory agency that approves pharmaceutical products. And here in the middle of COVID, they suddenly come out and they start slamming ivermectin, essentially giving recommendations. And, you know, my colleague, Mary Talley Bowden, you know, she, you know, after that FDA, those actions, first of all, that tweet, right? Suddenly pharmacists wouldn't fill. Hospitals were removing it from their formula. It's like the most attacked and vilified medicine, happens to be one of the safest in history. And so you got to understand what's, you know, we have to ask what's going on there. But she has recorded videos and audio of pharmacists indignantly and arrogantly refusing to fill valid legal prescriptions, citing this supposed FDA opinion. And Charlie, it is so absurd. I mean, the FDA admitted on their page that they had not reviewed the evidence for ivermectin, yet they come out and literally warning people away from using it. I mean, there's a bigger story behind this, Charlie. It's not just the FDA, but we can get into that in a second.
We have seen example after example of government malfeasance, but it's more than that, Dr. Corey. It is the private sector, this oligopoly that merged with government. And that was the eye-opener for so many people, was that the bodies that were supposed to be doing the regular, and you're pointing towards yourself. Tell us about that, Dr. Corey, because we used to think that there was an antagonistic or at least somewhat of a conflicting relationship between the regulators and the regulated, but it turns as if it was hand in glove.
That's exactly right. And I had no idea of this, Charlie, before COVID. You know, in my book, I write about my transformation. I mean, going into COVID, I literally trusted the agencies. I thought they were doing public health. I thought their advice was sound, coming from experts that are deeply studied. I believe the medical journals, that if you got your paper into the highest impact medical journals, that that was like squeaky, clean, tight, good science. And I've discovered that that's not the case. You are absolutely right. We are under massive federal regulatory capture by the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, they're not public health agencies. They literally work for the service of the pharmaceutical industry. And you can see those actions, right? So, you know, probably, and this FDA case and that horse tweet, right? You are not a horse, you're not a cow, stop it, y'all. There's a chapter in my book called The Horse Dewormer PR Campaign. And I think it's really important that people understand what happened in August of 2021. So that tweet goes out August 21st, 2021. And that tweet came out a week after a report showed that ivermectin prescriptions were hitting 90,000 a week in the US. So pharma's starting to get scared, right? Because ivermectin threatens everything in COVID, the whole market for vaccines, Paxlovid, molnupiravir, remdesivir. I mean, if we had widespread use of ivermectin, hospitals would empty, you wouldn't need any of these vaccines, you wouldn't need all these, you know, silly pipeline pharmaceuticals. And so ivermectin has a lot of enemies, and they went into action in August of 2021, started off with that tweet, which later became the most popular tweet in FDA history. 5 days after that, August 26, CDC sends out a memo to every state licensing board, which then gets sent to every licensed physician in the states. And in that memo, they talk about a rise in calls to poison control centers. Two investigative journals looked into that. They said it was like a 70% rise. When they actually called the poison control centers, it was something like an increase of like 2 to 3 calls. I mean, it was absolutely absurd. So you have the FDA with the tweet, CDC with this nonsense memo, and then 3 days later, Dr. Fauci of the NIH trotted out onto Jake Tapper and, you know, nightly news. And he says, you know, do not use this medicine. There's no clinical evidence that this works, you know. And so you see a concerted, synchronized action over a 10-day period by the three agencies, right? And then after Fauci goes out on CNN, we're bombarded with a PR campaign for weeks. Every late night talk show host, every news broadcaster is hammering this horse dewormer narrative that they're just pumping into our brains repeatedly. And, you know, guess who got COVID 3 days after that Fauci interview? Mr. Joe Rogan, right? So Rogan became the poster child for ivermectin because it's in the middle of this massive PR campaign trying to tell Americans not to, and doctors not to use ivermectin. And it's absolutely absurd. I mean, people, you have any idea how many lives have been lost because of this attack on ivermectin? It's been an absolute tragedy.
Oh, it has been. And just for the record here, Joe Rogan did a moral good for humanity for holding the ground the way he did. Dr. Corey, I don't know if we would have been able to long-term win on ivermectin if it wasn't for Rogan, because he dug in. Nope. In fact, I hope people remember Neil Young, amongst other musicians, went off of Spotify over ivermectin. That's how big of a deal this was. There's so many crisis Ukraine and the border. We just forget. This was the number one news story for weeks, and it's a tragedy because, Dr. Corey, they didn't argue with medical literature. They didn't argue looking at empirical data. They argued like the mob would, with a blunt, forced instrument.
Yep. And, you know, this is the scariest thing. This is why, as a physician, I've been transformed. I'm a bit estranged from medicine now, but their biggest weapon, you use the word weapon, Charles, their biggest weapon were the high-impact medical journals. I had no idea how compromised and controlled those journals are, but you didn't see any positive ivermectin studies being published in the highest-impact journals. They only published these huge pharma-conflicted studies, which were designed to show no efficacy. They had a lot of difficulty showing that. You could actually find the benefits in the trials. They just weren't statistically significant. Every time they got published, there's a chapter in my book called The Big Six, because it was literally six big trials of ivermectin. Same design, same conduct, you know, late treatment, low dose, short treatment, mildest patients. And every time one of those got published, huge, you know, ripplings of PR across the media sphere, like newspapers, television stations, you know, latest high quality, rigorous trial of ivermectin shows it doesn't work. And here I am sitting with thousands of doctors around the world. We know ivermectin is slaying COVID. I mean, my patients are turning around so quickly. And yet I'm watching the high impact medical journals publish lies. And that really transformed most of the physician community, not only in this country, but in the world. All the academics, they look at those papers. They, you know, we venerate those journals.
Yes, and no, so, they're you know, treated with holiness.
It's true.
Yes.
Yep. It's sad. And so I thought they were sacred, and now I have a very different view of them. I have a lot of difficulty reading papers in those trials. And, you know, just for your audience, Charlie, you know, I'm not the first person who said this. You know, Marcia Angel, she's a former 20-year editor of the number one medical journal in the world, the New England Journal of Medicine. She left that post in 2001 to write a book about how the pharmaceutical industry is deceiving us. And she said over half of what's published in those journals are not true. They are false. And never could that have been more accurate than without ivermectin.
So let's talk about this. You know, how did this happen with the medical journals in particular? Because we're talking about regulatory capture, institutional capture, academic capture. Is it, Dr. Corey, that there was a fair amount of intimidation, trust of the agencies, And there's so much muscle memory built in behind vaccine technology that vaccines are the greatest medical breakthrough of the last 100 years, and anything that might compromise or deteriorate or question the efficacy or the necessity of mass inoculation is anti-science.
Yes. So that was a new one. That kind of force, that dynamic you're talking about is a new one. But, you know, with the ivermectin, you can just put the vaccines aside. Off-patent repurposed drugs that we use off-label are the Achilles heel of the pharmaceutical industry and always have been, right? And ivermectin threatened the profits of all those products I already talked about, but in particular with the vaccines, right? This, you know, obviously we know that this is a bioweapon, whether it was accidentally released or purposely, we don't know. But this was a weaponized virus. Gain of function is bioweapons research. And, you know, there was a very large military component to the response. And so you're right. I mean, one of the public health goals was to combat vaccine hesitancy. And I will tell you, knowledge of a safe, cheap, widely available medication could not only prevent but treat COVID. If the population knew that, what do you think would happen to vaccine hesitancy? And you're right. And going back to the journals, I have a chapter in my book called The Editorial Mafia. And like to your point, I don't even know if they had to send a memo. It's been practiced, yes, for years. They don't publish good evidence on safe, repurposed nutraceuticals, vitamins. That's not where you're going to find science. They don't publish that kind of stuff.
No, never.
Because they know. They know not to do it.
But
so you don't have to tell them.
And it's not just money. I hope people, there is a money aspect for it. But the way that physicians are trained, that it is so one-track mind, so singular-minded, that if there is any vaccine that might be available, that you cannot question it, and that is the only solution. Not the fact that people need to lose weight or vitamin D levels or azithromycin or baby, yep, aspirin, all these different interventions. How many lives were unnecessarily lost during COVID because of the war on ivermectin and early treatments?
I would say somewhere near 90% of those died could have been saved with early treatments. And I am saying not just ivermectin, because although I wrote the book, The War on Ivermectin, one of my colleagues could have written the book, The War on Hydroxychloroquine, because it was the same war, same tactics, same results. And hydroxy was in play from early on. And we had a national distribution program starting in whatever, February, March of 2020. I mean, this pandemic would be a completely different experience. We would not have seen the dying that we did. It just would have been transformative. And but, you know, they've been attacking safe, repurposed drugs throughout, and they always have and always will. And a lot of people died.
Check out his book, The War on Ivermectin. It is one of the most important books published out there if you really want to open your eyes about how corrupt and, dare I say, evil, the American healthcare and the American government has become. They do not want your best interests. They don't want you to live long. They want you addicted and pliable, malleable, and controllable. As we approach another critical election year, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That is why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior citizen discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/Kirk today to seize an exclusive election year special. Check out a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. As an AMAC member, you not only enjoy money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years by becoming an AMAC member. You're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear. Join now at amac.us/Kirk. That is amac.us/Kirk. So Dr. Corey, I have to ask, with the last 4 years, what I have learned from you and what I have seen has triggered more skepticism about things that I consider to be true. So for example, have our regulatory agencies been telling us the truth about the childhood vaccination schedule? Again, I have no strong opinions on this. But I look at the amount of vaccines that they push on kids. Am I thinking correctly, Dr. Corey?
100%. And so if you haven't, I think you said you're not sure about this. So Again, as I was talking to you before, Charlie, going into COVID, my children, three daughters, fully vaccinated, the whole schedule, everything, never questioned vaccines. They are, you know, what the greatest medical intervention ever. And after watching the behaviors and what happened around the COVID vaccine, and then starting to, you know, meet people, seriously, deeply studied people who've, you know, now I'm kind of in this medical freedom movement. And I started to meet deeply studied people on childhood vaccines. And the truth about the childhood vaccines and that schedule is as nightmarish as the COVID vaccines. I mean, almost the whole vaccine, I would say, industry is built on myths. That there's no science to show that the vaccines had any appreciable impact on death or rates of cases of most childhood disease. And then to your point just now, when you see those posters and those graphics of the amount of vaccines, like when I was a kid, I was born in 1970, I think it was like 8 or 11 injections. And now the scheduled hopeful is up to 78.
That's correct.
I mean, 78 different injections for our children. And almost all of them started exploding after they got immunity from liability in 1986. And so there's an onslaught of this vaccine industry trying to put a needle into every arm for every possible condition. And our health is suffering. I mean, Bobby Kennedy talks about this all the time. I mean, chronic illness rates, autism rates have exploded, and it's all coincident with the explosion in that schedule. So, I mean, it is doing immense damage to us on a chronic basis. And I find the whole thing really scary. And I'll tell you here, Charlie, I say it right now. If I had young children today, they would not receive one single childhood vaccine, period. End of story.
Wow, that's a big statement. And that, Dr. Corey, that you would not have even thought of that. I mean, you fully vaccinated all your Never. Kids. And so does that include polio and hepatitis B?
Yep.
And pneumococcal pneumonia?
100%. The risks outweigh the benefits, number one. Number two, for your readers, if they're interested to see the veracity of this statement, I highly recommend a book called Turtles All the Way Down, translated by Mary Holland. It's written by, carefully here, Charlie, it's written by five anonymous Israeli researchers. And this is an immensely interesting book. It's comprehensive. It's deeply referenced. And it goes into about every aspect and issue and question around each one of those vaccines. The polio story is a fascinating story. Most of what was called polio back then was not polio. It was not infectious. It was actually DDT or insecticide poisoning. I mean, polio is the only childhood disease which exploded in the 1900s while all of the other childhood diseases started going down. So someone needs to answer me that question. And it was much more common in rural areas than crowded urban areas. So I don't want to go too far down the polio thing, but Charlie, no,
there's
I
a
really
book called The Moth of the Iron Lung that people can check out. But please continue, Dr. Corey. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but that book, Turtles All the Way Down, is what truly opened my eyes. There's another book called Dissolving Illusions, again, deeply referenced. And you learn the truth of that we have been propagated a myth, and particularly in medical school. I mean, there's no training on vaccines in medical school. There's no education on it. It's just, this is the schedule. It's good for kids. And they've already been proven to be safe and effective and eradicating diseases. And none of those things are true. Not safe, not effective, and has not eradicated diseases in our history.
I know a lot of families that are thinking that way, but just the pediatric bullying that occurs in this country over vaccines. Can you comment on that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they've weaponized this whole vaccine intervention to the point where, like, they've infested state legislatures. You have states all over the country passing laws requiring every childhood, school-age child to receive this whole battery of vaccines. Exemptions, they weaponize anyone who goes after exemptions. Like in California, if you submit four or more exemptions, you're going to get investigated as a doctor. Other states, they've outlawed exemptions. And so, I mean, this battery that they're doing, I mean, and every and then there's pediatrician, Charlie, that will not accept a family or a child into their practice if the parents do not want them to get vaccinated. Luckily, there are some, they're hard to find. There are other pediatricians who are very supportive and welcoming of those children and those families. But if you don't want to get your kid vaccinated, your life is going to be difficult. I mean, you're probably looking at homeschooling in many states or moving
or
from a different state.
So many parents ask me, they say, you know, what can I do? Because I don't feel as if I want to give my kid every single one of these shots. And even more tragically, Dr. Corey, I have parents that come up to me and they said, my kid was doing just fine until they got the second dose of the MMR vaccine, and my kid had a seizure or my kid started acting differently. And we don't even listen to those people. We act as if those, you know, those sort of side effects just don't exist.
Yeah, I mean, my life now and where I travel, and I guess, Charlie, you have the same experiences. I mean, I know just so many parents of vaccine-injured children, and their lives have been, you know, it's not that they were just injured, and the child that they brought home from the pediatrician's office is not the child that they brought there, but it's they are transformed for the rest of their lives. There are parents who have children who need total care, and everything happened after the vaccine. And, you know, yes, you want to dismiss this as exceedingly rare and just a tragic, unfortunate circumstance. That's the issue. You know, we talked about the control and capture of the journals and the agencies. I mean, you know, if you watch the documentary Vaxxed, you know, Adele Bigtree, I mean, they have the story of a CDC whistleblower. They had definitive evidence that the vaccines cause autism. They shredded that data. And he came out and tried to blow the whistle. You don't hear it. The media never picks it up. I mean, this is really dark stuff around these vaccines. And I want to get the truth out. These people need voices. They need to be heard. And let me finish with this, Charlie, is that's the one good thing about this topic we're talking about, is that what happened in COVID, this overreach, this totalitarianism, and what they did has many Americans now questioning, wondering, and there's information out there to find out the truth and really be able to take good actions and have good guidance to keep yourself and your family healthy.
Yeah, more and more families are saying no, and there are more and more independent operating pediatricians that are leaving the big conglomerates, and they're doing one-off consultations, and they're taking families that believe in medical freedom. Dr. Corey, last question. Has anybody apologized to you for being wrong?
Absolutely not. Not one. I'm trying to think of if we've gotten an email into like my nonprofit organization saying, I didn't believe you at first and now I do, but I can't recall an apology or a recognition of fault or error.
I ask that intentionally because what are we really dealing with here? These are not good people. This is now we're now no longer getting in from the efficacy. Oh, what they did didn't work. There is a darkness to their behavior that I believe my religion explains. But the fact that they wouldn't even say, oh, yeah, sorry, Dr. Corey, for trying to steal your license and destroy your career. By the way, just so you understand, Dr. Corey was one of the leaders in, I believe, ultrasound type technology, right? And you were celebrated and heralded, right? You were well published. And you decided to say, hey, there's an intervention that's working for the biggest pandemic in my lifetime, and they try to take you out, and you don't even get as much as, hey, sorry about that.
No, in fact, Charlie, they're still coming after us. I mean, this just in the last 6 months alone, I've had to do expert witness testimony defending my colleagues out there who the boards are coming after them for prescribing ivermectin, and they're at risk of losing their licenses. I mean, they're not stopping. They want to make sure that anyone who believes or used ivermectin is punished, and it's this war is still going on. And it's going to go on for a long time. And besides that evil that you talked about, it's cowardice. I mean, I think there are some reasonably good people just do not have the courage to speak up and speak out about what they're witnessing and what other people are doing. And they're complicit.
I agree. However, if you know the good and you're too cowardly to act on it, then you're not good. Dr. Corey, thank you so much. Check out the War on Ivermectin. God bless. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. We're all getting the sense that we're being lied to. Well, that's because we are. Suspicious events are unfolding. Even worse, it's hard to believe what anyone has to say about it. And we all know the mainstream media has their own agenda. That's why you need to trust your gut and take action. It's time to prepare. Get started at MyPatriotSupply.com. Load up on 3-month emergency food kits packed with ready hour foods from My Patriot Supply. You will save $200 per kit. These kits provide over 2,000 calories every day. Serving over 3 million families since 2008, My Patriot Supply is equipped to help yours achieve self-reliance. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on as many kits as you need from My Patriot Supply. They ship fast and free and arrive in unmarked boxes. Order by 3 p.m. and your order will ship the same day. Save $200 per kit at MyPatriotSupply.com. That is MyPatriotSupply.com. They ship fast and free and arrive in unmarked boxes. Order by 3 p.m. today. They're a wonderful, wonderful product, so check it out right now at MyPatriotSupply.com. Recently, I spoke at a wonderful church, Influence Church, and it is Phil Hottenspiller's church, and he is the author of It's Midnight in America, Confront Fear and Embrace Courage as the Final Hour Approaches. Phil, welcome to the program. Tell us all about your book.
Hey, thank you so much, Charlie. Well, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of people were fearful. A lot of people wondered what was going on. And we decided to not close down, as a few other churches did. And I just began to think about America and the condition it was in, given the just the running roughshod over Constitution, denying that Jesus was king. We saw that in the churches. We saw it in the community. And this thought just came to me. This is a midnight hour for America. And so I just began to kind of write some notes down. And about the same time, my literary agent called me and said, hey, do you have anything on the shelf that you'd like to start working on? And I said, I actually do. And so that began the journey of writing this book. And I'm excited about what's in it. It's very interesting, very different approach than a lot of people have taken to Midnight in America.
Well, tell us about it, Phil, because it's contrasted with the kind of typical, it's morning in America. It's our best days are ahead. You're saying, no, it is our best days might be ahead, but it's dark right now. So build it out.
Yeah, well, the first chapter is really, this is a dress rehearsal. Everything that was happening in 2021, I really believe was planned and structured to see how to control society. And quite honestly, it worked pretty well for them. And so I just kind of unfold that. And then I go into something called the prophetic clock. And a lot of people don't realize that prophecy is very unique to the Word of God versus like the writings of the Hindus or of Muhammad. So there's actually predictive things that we can look at that are written 2,500 years ago that are being fulfilled today. So the first thing that we talk about in the prophetic clock is Israel's dispersia from the book of Jeremiah and how they were dispersed all over the world. But then we see some things coming together. Jesus said in Matthew 24 that nation would rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And the first time that that happened was in World War I, 1914, 1917. You can mark in Matthew 24 those dates. Then we see the clock really begin to tick in 1948 with Israel becoming a nation. Very quickly, they established the law of return. Jews worldwide can come back. We see the great Jewish expulsion from the USSR in the 70s, migration into Israel, again, fulfillment of scripture, Zechariah's fulfillment out of Ethiopia, will I call my people. We saw three airlifts out of Ethiopia. And so that's just kind of the beginning of the clock. You kind of get a vibe and a feel for what really is happening from the Word of God. And I give you seven more prophetic fulfillments like that, and three that are yet to be fulfilled, and they're on God's timetable.
So Phil, I know that you have a heart for this country, and you run American Faith, and it does a great job. There's a movement afoot, as we talked about at your wonderful church, to try and get Christians disengaged. It started with Tim Alberta's book, which was all about Christian nationalism, then Rob Reiner's film about Christian nationalism. And now there's this new individual by the name of Jim Wallace. I was up early this morning. I record MSNBC and I fast forward through it until I see, I see the different segments. He's getting the regime treatment. He has a new book called The False White Gospel. I want you to respond to this piece of tape here. Play cut 38.
Trump is projecting a trajectory in politics of fear, hate, and violence. Now that's being projected onto religion. The same thing. Yeah. So how do we overcome that fear?
Right.
How do we talk about the politics of neighbor love?
Yep.
That's really what we're talking about.
That is the key. The new book is titled The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. Author Jim Wallace.
Rejecting Christian nationalism. Phil, your response.
Cultural Marxism, it's really what it is. It comes back to pit one group against another group in order to advance your cause, which your cause is a progressive, extreme left-wing agenda. And the best thing to do is to pick on the white guy in the neighborhood, the white church specifically, because clearly they must be the problem. And you think about how hard we've really worked and how far we've come to try to create equality in American government, in American society, only to be pushed back by statements like this. So I think, again, to me, it goes back to let's create a revolution and let's make sure that under no circumstances Donald Trump gets elected as president again.
So the in your book, you talk about the way forward. What is your case then of what Christians need to do now till November?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to do more than pray. Pray is really essential, critical for every believer to pray. But I say engage as well. You need to find ways to be engaged in your community. You need to find ways to lift up your voice and be heard wherever you are. Use whatever's at your means. You may not have a big social following. You may not have a lot of friends in high places, but you do have friends and you do have a voice. And if every person that is silent, I know in California alone, if we could just get the Christians to vote in California, this state would turn into a red state. And I know that's a pretty big statement, but when you see the kind of numbers of people that do not get out to vote, do not lift their voice, is it any wonder what's happening to our state and our nation?
And why do you think so few Christians vote? What is your explanation there, Phil? What is your hypothesis?
Well, I think the complacency comes from two sides. I think it comes, number one, I think it's all going to work out fine anyway. Somebody smarter than me will figure it out. And after all, my life is pretty comfortable, pretty easy right now. So what's the big deal? And then I think there's another group, and I think it's a smaller group, and that's the group that says, look, God's going to work it all out, and I just want to go to heaven anyway. I want to be raptured out. I want to just be airlifted from earth to heaven. And I think that's another tragic, tragic position. But I think it does exist within Christian circles.
Yeah, it is. It's a dilemma and a challenge for us to overcome. Tell our audience all about the great work you're doing at AmericanFaith.com, Phil.
Well, you know, we started it because I was mad at the governor. I didn't know what else to do. I said, let's just start pushing my sermons on democracy, on being a republic and constitutional rights. And next thing I know, I've actually got a following, and we begin to hire journalists. And now we produce about 35 to 40 original stories a day, and our audience is about 22 million. And it's growing quickly. We have Laura Trump as our keynote speaker this year. We had a wonderful keynote speaker last year, Charlie Kirk, who knocked it out of the park, I might add. So it's exciting to be a part of this media world. And I know very little about it. I just know that I take the next prescribed step, and God seems to bless it as we go.
Phil, in closing here, what is your challenge to pastors that are watching or listening that say, I know there's something wrong with the country, but I don't want to be too political?
You know, I think it's the most essential character trait, according to Churchill, is courage. Everything else is built on it. And the Bible is the most political book on planet Earth. Every single key individual in the Bible was confronting a regime that was anti-God. And whether you're talking about Nimrod, or you're talking about the Pharaoh, or you're talking about Nebuchadnezzar or the Caesars of Rome, and they always realize that this was the issue. If you can't get government right, you can't freely spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think the real problem is not in the churches. It's really in the leadership. We need leaders to stand up and be strong, be heard, and quit cowering behind all kinds of different shadows and mirrors and claiming to be spiritual and say, well, I just preach the gospel.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. What an unbelievable start to 2024. We had last month saving babies with preborn by providing ultrasounds. And we're doing again this year what we did last year. We're going to stand for life because remaining silent in the face of the most radically pro-death administration is not an option. As Sir Edmund Burke said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing, and we're not going to do nothing. Your gift to preborn will give a girl the truth about what's happening in her body so that she can make the right choice. $280 can save 10 babies. $28 a month can save a baby a month all year long. And a $15,000 gift will provide a complete ultrasound machine that will save thousands of babies for years and years to come. And will also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. Call 833-850-2229. That's 833-850-2229, or click on the preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is charliekirk.com, and click on the preborn banner. Also, save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. I'm a donor to this organization. They're terrific. Go to charliekirk.com, click on the preborn banner. So, Phil, some of these pastors say that I don't want to do politics, that I only preach the gospel. I know that you have some thoughts about this both in your book and in your ministry. Broadly, what do you think of those pastors?
Well, I think they're misguided at best, and they're obstructionists at worst, because this is all about keeping the gospel free in America, defending the Constitution. If you don't have that, you're going to all be talking about techniques and theology sitting behind prison bars, because that's the direction this is going. One of the chapters in my book is called America Needs More Blacksmiths. And that might seem like an unusual title, but the strategy of the Philistines when they went in and conquered Israel was to remove all the blacksmiths. Now Israel could not make weapons of war, no swords, no spears, nothing. But it was even worse than that, because they had to go to the Philistines to have their agricultural tools sharpened. So they were totally dependent on a foreign government. That's exactly what's happening here in America. And if you take away our weapons, meaning free speech, our Constitution, you take those away, and then you force us to get everything from you, become government dependent, make more government employees, you were right back in the same old situation that Israel was of old. That leads us to the next thing, Charlie, and that is a one-world government. So what's on the scale here is really, where's this thing going? Well, if you go back in your Bible to the time of Nimrod, Genesis 10 and 11, you see the first human kingdom was Babylon. And Babylon, not only was it a geographical location, but it was also a spiritual entity that runs itself through the entire Word of God and the history of mankind. It's only culminated in Revelation chapter 17 and 18 when Babylon, the great whore, is judged by God. And so if you don't see the signs of a one-world government, all you have to do is look no further than World Economic Forum. You can see the breaking down of borders that we see in America. These are indications that there's an agenda afoot of a cabal that is seeking to build a one-world government. And of course, it is predicted in the Word of God. It doesn't mean that we can't slow its pace. It doesn't mean that we can't rise above it and be strong. And that's really what I'm calling people to do in this book. One of the things I do, Charlie, just kind of a final note here, and then we can dialogue a little bit more, is that the most often question I get asked is, where is America in biblical prophecy? And if you Google search it, you'll find that there's really not good answers, or there's an obscure reference to Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 13. What I do is I take a fresh approach, an original approach, and I show you where America is in biblical prophecy, and I also show you where it will be judged in Scripture. And it's very unique. I don't want to give away the farm, but I want to just kind of put it out there for people to get the book, read it. I think you're going to really be fascinated by that chapter.
I can't wait to read it. And I just, there is a direct agenda right now to try to have pastors not declare truth, not to understand that our God is a God of order and distinction, and He gives us a civil law. He gives us a moral law on how to organize our government. In fact, the American government is constituted on these biblical commandments and promises. Final thoughts, Phil.
All 17 points in the Constitution were preached by the preachers of New England prior to the building of the Constitution. It was the Black Robe Society that they were referred to, because the clerics wore black robes, that made a difference, that made our nation free. We need to go back to our roots.
Back to our roots is right. Phil, God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to just show this up on screen really quick. I think we're the first one to pinpoint this. Look at the op. The op is trying to make it seem as if Christians are radical, that they don't want a free society, that they're cultish, and they're trying to infiltrate the church. They know that if Christians are able to get back to 72, Project 72, we've said this, we're the only program that has said this to my knowledge. I believe the number was 72. Which is 72% of evangelical support, that went down. Donald Trump did 4 points worse with Christian voters in 2020 than he did in 2016. Look at this. The False White Gospel with Jim Wallace. The Kingdom, the Power, the Glory by Tim Alberta. What Would Jesus Do? WWJD with God and Country. These are all left-wing ops that have come out in the last couple months of books, organizations, alleged synthetic movements, of movies that are trying to get Christians no longer engaged, from Rob Reiner, from Tim Alberta, to Jim Wallace. We look at this stuff very carefully and closely, and I know an op when I see it. There is a brain trust on the left that said, we got to put together this narrative. You're trying to tell me Jim Wallace, the original title of Jim Wallace's book was The False Gospel. Somebody added Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. That's an op. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.